Good afternoon. We're in the schedule business. Thank you. So I hereby call the meeting of the Maryland Aviation Commission order at 1:02 p.m. Please note, the Maryland Aviation Commission meetings are now being live streamed and recorded. The report of this meeting will be posted on the commission's webpage. I ask any members of the public in attendance to now identify yourself by stating your name and then spelling it so that the minutes accurately reflect anyone's attendance.
I'm not a member of the public, but my friend here, Charles Duncan, is. He's a longtime exec at Continental and United. He was passing through BWI today on a work trip. So he wanted lunch and here we are.
That's it. That's all we got. Now, are you out of Chicago? Where are you?
Virginia Beach.
Oh, Virginia Beach.
He's retired from United.
Ah, that's the way to do it.
Well, congratulations. Thanks. Thanks for that. And that's Charles Duncan.
Just a few opening comments. One, if you haven't heard, Mr. Nichols still deal with some issues, so I'm not going to go much further than that, but hopefully he'll be with us soon, communicating with him back and forth. As you know, he's a fantastic member, fantastic pillar in the community. So anyway, he did contact me last night. We've been trading back and forth. So just you're aware of that. That's why Mr. Nichols is not here today. And then the other thing I wanted to just, I did want to discuss with you, you know, I said a lot of mission, I think it's 54. But the one that I particularly enjoy being on and is well organized to run is the Transportation Authority, which runs all the toll switches. And they have a structure where they meet with their vendors. And they've set up a committee structure, and it's around capital programming, administration, and finance. So what I'd like to propose is that we set up something similar for this commission to get, you know, it does involve more work members, to be frank. But I think overall, where we are as an airport, I just think it makes a lot of sense, given some of the financial pressures we're under, some of the pressures we're under, some of the community pressures. I think for us to have a little bit more deeper dive on some of these issues is important, not just to have them in this larger commission meeting. So I'll have to work with the legal team because there are legal ways you do this, make sure that you're meeting some of the requirements there, which again, we have established with the Transportation Authority. So I will have our team attorney work with Kim over there at the Transportation Authority to set that up. It's pretty basic, to be frank. So we'll set up the group, you know, accordingly. So I'd like to try to get that moving maybe by the next time we meet, we sort of finalize that. Okay, so I can get this moving fairly quick.
Okay. So Paul, it would be the same committees as you have with the authority basically.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean we can talk about that, but at the end of the day, the capital really is everything from planning, engineering to capital. The finances, you know, everything we do in terms of air service and the numbers, which is what they look at a lot of. And administrations, everything from HR to fair practice to IT related issues. And that's how they've structured theirs. I think they combined two of theirs at one time, but it used to be three like that. So I spoke to them and they said that worked real well for them. And then basically, I think it's like four members per committee there. The board decides who's on those members, then they elect a chair person for that group. And then they meet with staff, you know, in between their meetings and work through issues. And that way, when something's brought to the full commission, you know that someone's looked deeper that's on the commission at the issue. And so that it plays out pretty good. And well, you sat on the chair all the time as well. But it's worked really well over there. So I'd like to apply that same here. And just, you know, I'm thinking similar to the full commission, which I also sit on, same pressures, right? Whether it's the COLA, you know, it's CSX or it's TPA, the Trade Atlantic and the Hart Miller Island. There were some much larger issues there that we all need to make sure we're having sort of open and thoughtful discussion about some of these issues. So it's a mechanism to do that. So anyway, that's okay. Very good. So that will turn to the agenda itself. And the first is approval of the August 21st meeting minutes under tab A. Is there a motion?
Make a motion.
Second.
Aye.
Second agenda item is approval.
At least you know some Commissioner Nichols.
I do, but
you did.
Commissioner Sims is in traffic.
Okay. No, there's no way that's traffic. As it took me almost 3 hours to get from east to the house. Well, maybe you recall, I-97, we had that major incident. Once that occurs, the entire system, and with no bridge, you're on that side, you're terrible, but, so I understand that. So approval of the MDOT-MA six-year capital program, tab B, you need this or you can.
Actually, I'm with the executive.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That comes up. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
See you all. Also good to see that Commissioner Chancellor, don't even want to go in the park, he's only got the memo. Get my time memo. So I don't have, well, I don't have a lot to present today. I will be weighing in on the agenda as we go through it. One point I do want to touch on is have a good conversation with Commissioner Chancellor on my way to, Eastern Shore.
Where you were.
I was on my way to the Eastern Shore, not from Eastern Shore. And it was a follow-up to a conversation that Commissioner Reese and I had in this meeting, at the last meeting, where she made the point that, I had opposed an item, legislative item, and I had responded that no, I had not opposed the item. So I just want to clear it up because I think Commissioner Chancellor is probably going to touch on that in his presentation. So I wasn't clear on the item that she was referring to. There's one item that the Department of Transportation posed, and that was an item, this was back in 2022. And I formed, in essence, another body that would have some of the same duties as the Northern Aviation Commission, and the administration holds that. And so that's the one item related to the roundtable that the administration opposed. The MAA itself, didn't have the authority to oppose this. I just wanted to clarify that because based on my conversation with Commissioner Chancellor, I think he created some confusion and the appearance of a contradiction of what had happened in the past. So other than that, I have nothing else to present. I am looking forward to Commissioner Chancellor's presentation. We've had a chance to take an initial review of it. So we're looking forward to working with it.
Do you have any questions? Ricky, can you, I was asking Wayne, the announcement a couple of weeks ago of raising the flights at National seems like they're pushing forward. Does, what impact does that have? It's insignificant, or does it actually?
So so this is an expansion of slots.
Yes.
At Reagan National.
Yeah.
So we spent a lot of effort kind of pushing back on team slots.
Yes.
Some 14 slots, which we were working with our congressional delegation and other jurisdictions and their congressional delegations. And we were able to push back on that. They ultimately, Congress ultimately authorized four additional,
five
additional slots. Yeah.
It's
at,
not that.
At the time, we were estimating, what, about 150?
It's about 35,000 passengers per slot pair.
Yeah.
Okay. But we can analyze it again now that we know which destination it is and get that a little more exact. But that's based on what happened the last round and the flights that were added in. Other passengers switched airport at that point.
In total, about 150,000. We'll see how that plays out.
Any other questions? Very good. Now, the business development management approval that MDOT's six-year capital plan.
You guys should all have in your packet, Abby. So within your packet there, this is the annually transportation article requires you guys to approve our capital program. So we submitted our draft to the secretary's office in September. The final is due in December with the final approval with your approval, then the approval from the General Assembly. We added six major capital projects that we'll see here. This year's unique as we also had some cuts or deferrals or changes to the program. Typically, we're always adding Oh, it is. That's what I thought. Okay, I was like, what? I thought the letter was up there. Not a problem. I was surprised. So just wanted to draw your attention to those six capital projects, and we'll also come across some cuts. Program is a $1 billion program. It decreased about $90 million from the previous capital program. We did have some fiscal constraints of the Transportation Trust Fund, so that cut a lot of, they cut a few of our projects or deferred a few of the projects. About $60 million from TTF. Some of it's matched and some of the project costs came down. So they're just a little recap. The capital projects are categorized into major construction, major development and evaluation, which we call D&E, and system preservation. So if you go on to page two, the six capital projects, we've added five for BWI, one for Marcus State. Most of these are federally funded or other funded. We rely less than a third on the Transportation Trust Fund to fund our capital program, but we it's a very important part of our program so that we can make sure we have our matches for our federal and our PFC program. The first large project that you see added here was for this consolidated rental car facility. This is CFC funded. That's our customer facility charge. The customer pays a charge to first pay debt, and then any remaining funds go into a trustee's facility fund to pay for capital improvement. The rental car agreement, their buildings are at 20-year useful life, so they also have another clause in their contract requires based on market share for them to reallocate themselves. So they're going through a reallocation period right now, some upgrades to that as a result of the reallocation would be wayfinding and then some upgrades to the fire suppression. There's also some other projects in here for future planning so that we have a good outlook of what the CFC program will look like. However, all those projects before they go through our program have to be approved by the MDTA board. So just wanted to let you know that. So the only three projects that are approved right now that we've gotten approval from the RAC and MDTA is wayfinding, fire suppression, and reallocation. The other projects, as they move forward, we'll go through that process. Snow removal equipment building, we've invested a lot of money in our snow removal equipment. Right now, it's a lot. If you've gone on tours, it's sitting on the airfield both. And we want to preserve that. The FAA has noticed it. We've noticed it for many, many years. So we do want to provide a shelter to preserve the useful life of that equipment because it's very expensive. We're working on seeking federal funding for that project as well as a state match. We also have the runway 1028 rehabilitation here at BWI Airport. We're looking for special and federal funding. I apologize, I didn't mention this. The total estimated cost of all the sources of funding is in the first line. So we have $34 million on the CFC projects, the snow equipment building about $15 million, $43 million on the rehab project, BWI. We also have a passenger movement modernization program here to replace our passenger boarding bridges, upgrade our moving walkways. We're proud to say that we are a recipient of the ATP grant to help fund that. We received $14 million for the, what we call PBBs, passenger boarding bridges. That project is a total of $29.1 million. And last but not least, we have the aircraft traffic control tower, and that is at Marcus State Airport, one of the oldest towers in the country. We are happy to say we also received an ATP grant. I apologize, an airport terminal planning grant. That is one of the grants that are under the bill funding that came out of COVID. So we received $5 million at Martin State Airport to start that project, which we were happy to be underway. I should mention two things is both the tower here at Martin State and at BWI is not owned by the FAA. So that puts us at a disadvantage for FAA traffic, their air traffic control tower funding that came out of bill. So we have to compete under either the ATP program or the federal contract tower program for Martin State. We have not been successful under FCT. So those are the six major capital programs, projects that we're seeking approval from you today. There is a summary on page three of all the other projects that are underway. It also talks about where they are in the process and if the funding was deferred or decreased. So I do want to draw your attention on page four. It's page five. The DE bag claim expansion that has been deferred. That project you guys approved last year was mostly TTF funded. Due to fiscal constraints, that has been cut, and the project scope is being deferring the relocation of Maryland Police Department headquarters. And under development and evaluation, that's primarily your planning. So you'll see there that we've added to the capital program, the master plan. We're seeking federal funding for that. That's on the bottom of page 5. You move on to page 6. Under our PFC program, we're looking for a planning grant for the ticket counter expansion. Then we have under TTF funding, our roof replacement, and then the air traffic controller tower here at BWI and the CD connector program. Those are your planning projects. System preservation was cut, so there's nothing to be added there. That's a high-level summary. I'll take any questions.
Before you open up the question,
Sorry.
But you probably won't see a robust increase in our capital program until we complete a master planning project, as I stated in one of the previous meetings. We pretty much completed all the projects that are in our plan. So anything else substantial will come out of the new master planning process. The funding here is for a federal grant because the new master plan will be a federally funded master plan. We'll go through that process, but we're probably 2 years, at least 2 years away from actually doing a master plan. There's some pre-work that has to be done. For example, behind this federal application, there's a lot of scope that has to be done in order for the FAA to even agree to fund a master plan and so on. So that's what you see here. We're hoping that this will be federally funded and that they will support it. But the master plan itself is a couple years away for a host of reasons. You don't see a robust change in the CTP until that's when we get to the other side of the master plan.
And if I could, just to give a little bit more of the financial background here. As you may recall, last year we had roughly a $3 billion hole in the capital program. Or in the improvement of capital and operating. And doing with some of the actions that were taken last year, some rainy day funds that allow us to do things for 1 year, particularly on the operating side. And the legislature did pass roughly $1.8 billion worth of new revenues that basically reduced the amount of cuts we had to make. We still had to do cuts. And then as compared to this year's capital program, basically the continuing slow growth, relatively slow growth of the economy in the state of Maryland, the ongoing cost increases for both labor and capital projects, and then our projected revenues not hitting where we thought they would be, particularly the motor fuel tax, which is our largest source of the transportation trust fund, is down roughly $350 million. Lots of reasons there. It's not just electric vehicles. It's changed travel behavior, obviously, cars being much more efficient have driven that. And then our operating costs have increased $300 million than we projected last year. So that's put a lot of pressure. So obviously the MAA gets its own, a lot of its own money. That's the Stanley Airport, but also the trust fund does kick in money, which then pulls down other projects. And that's where you see some of these deferrals. And if you media, tremendous deferrals in the other modes that we try to obviously put all the needs out there, how we do this best, how do we maximize the federal dollars that we do get. But at the end of the day, we still have a significant hole in the program of roughly $1.3 billion this year that we've had to address in the draft. We'll see how it plays out in the final, which then gets submitted, as just mentioned, we'd submit that to the legislature for consideration January 15th, and that will play out in that process. Just to give you the larger context of what your team has been doing with every mode has been dealing with. And so it's everyone's sort of had to come to the table to deal with this issue. So anyway, I just want to set that. I'm sorry, you had a question.
Oh, I was going to ask about the. No, actually, I'll hold my question for a minute. Regroup.
Okay.
So I just want to mention in summary, it's a $1 billion capital program that you guys have pre-approved. We're adding 140 million, so less than almost just roughly over 10% of the program. 5 projects at BWI and 1 at Martin State that we're here to seek your approval on today. So thank you.
Yes.
So I hate to drag everybody back, but as a relatively new commissioner, I just want to completely understand what the import of our decision is today in terms of being able to allow some committee structure that may be created around capital projects to come back and actually look deeply at each of the projects that have been proposed and maybe delay some, defer some, change some, even eliminate some. So that's my question. So what import does this decision have on a future process like that?
I think it's for the next cycle, to be frank. So when you look at these projects, these are fairly straightforward. In my estimation, we're instead of good repair.
Yep.
Their investments are already half out there that we got to keep up with. I mean, you know, generally, if you look at the six there, that's what they do. But yeah, I think as we develop the next cycle of the program, I think that's where we need to. And if we're trying to get more revenue, it may be a much broader discussion than just state of repair type projects. So you
refer to these as state of repair and just continue maintenance, even though there's a couple that are later on, the development and evaluation ones, those are at an early, much earlier stage, such as the air traffic control tower and the CD connector.
Yes.
Much earlier. So those are really going to be looked at in more detail as we go forward. Those are not
funded for construction.
Exactly. Not funded for construction.
I have a question.
Thank you.
I'm confused. It says six new major capital projects. I only count five. Am I missing one? What am I missing?
One, two, three, four, five.
There.
Page two, page three.
Yeah, that's. Is there a six?
Five EWI, one more. There
look like
there's
a lot.
Four
EWI,
should be five.
So is it? It's only five.
Five. Yeah, and I'll bring your attention to while we're talking. There's another typo. I just want to let you know, guys. Hold on. I just found it today when I was reviewing it. There's a project that says it's being funded by CFCs. That's not the first project. Should be PFCs. I talked to Stacy earlier before this call. It's on page six, the ticket counter expansion at the top there. So we'll correct that and make sure we get a revision out to you as well. And thank you, Ned. And not notice that there. I just saw the six and I saw the one DWI and just subtracted one.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So when I look at these runway 1028 rehab, depending on what you plan to do with this runway, would result in how you're rehabbing it to what, you know, thickness, strength you would want the concrete, correct? For what landing weight you would be planning for it to be primarily used for. I don't see anything mentioned about ILS or any other systems, just these LED lights. So I'm just curious, what is this rooted in? Without adhering to a master plan, what is the basis for this runway resurfacing and rehabilitation?
Maintenance. And when it's considered major maintenance, then it becomes eligible for federal funding, which is important. We're not increasing strength. We're not changing our loading. We're not changing runway lengths. We're merely basically doing a mill and replace is our proposal. It's part of my conversation. Sure. I'll have in just a few moments on the capacity component.
Well, what if you would need this to be better than what you're making it?
That will be handled in future planning. Okay. If there's something in the future. You always have to live today as if you're living for today. We got to take care of what we have.
That's true.
There's certain safety standards and pavement integrity that we have to make sure we maintain at any point. Can't wait for a future project because we don't let a future project itself.
So isn't there, Paul, you can probably speak to this. Isn't there some sort of pavement report that you have that says at these points in times, and this is just, is this just one of those projects?
The pavement management program.
We'll touch on that.
Oh, okay.
Thank you for asking the question. The other, excuse me, Paul, but if you'd be clear on that, because we're going to be seeking a vote on the approval of this. Yeah. So I want to make sure we're answering the question. So, I mean, my understanding is this is basically ongoing maintenance that has to be done.
Correct. We're in design. Correct. We're in conversations with the stakeholders, which in this case is the airline operators. And all we're doing is working, okay, what's the acceptable period of closure, which is part of my presentation. So I'll touch on that too.
But this has nothing to do with any type of expansion. It has to do with the current service that we have there today. Right. And making sure that facility, that portion of the runway is safe to do.
Yes, sir.
And it's not touching taxiways.
There is an intersection, a taxiway delta,
mm-hmm.
Which the runway passes through and delta passes across runway 10-28, so we use it up to do just the intersection. No other taxi. It's intersection.
Construct.
Yes.
You're just comparing what's out there today.
Okay. And Ricky hit it on the head. The key is the pavement management plan, because that defines what, when, and where.
As we go through this process, and when we make this vote today, if in the future there's more money or whatever happens, things open up and you add projects, you'll come back to us. Okay, and we'll get a chance to then reapprove what we've done.
Yeah, and that's, and again, that's what the concept of certain these committees, so that right, that committee would be going through that process.
Well, that's why I say I think the committees are a good thing.
Yeah. So in the past, the focus of this particular vote has been new projects or significant modifications in the scope of a project. There hasn't been a lot of discussion projects that are already in the CPP that the committee structure will allow for discussion of anything that's in the CPP.
The timing wise, Ricky or Chair, we've got to get this in because it's got to go in the CTP, right? Yes. In November. So, yes. So I don't think committee structure is going
to
really.
We're not asking that this be subject to committee
structure. No,
the chairman said this, the committee structure, that
yeah, would be a big site.
And again, I think the nature of these projects, and that's why I'm going to ask the question about what is the nature of one project, which is ongoing maintenance. I mean, you have that same pavement management for your road. Your road's around there, right?
Yes, sir. And the parking lots.
Yes. Okay. Any other questions? If not, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Mr. Shank, Plan and Engineering.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Presentation. So to the line of discussion we just had, we're going to talk a little about our airfield with respect to the runways. Okay. And what I want to touch on is one just quick history background about
the airport. Let me tee this up first.
Yes,
so I asked Paul to do a kind of a history of the runway system here, because we spend a lot of time talking about runways, sometimes flirting with the idea of runways, right? And so I think at some point we may get to a real discussion around expansion of our airfield capacity. And I think it helps the commissioners, you guys can understand how we've evolved to this point and where we are today.
Thank you. So I'm also talk then about the projected demand and capacity of what we have. Then I'm going to talk about FAA. And last, I'm going to drill into that very effort. So while I'm rehabbing runways, Mr. Pinnell is sitting right behind you. And it's key there, because that's keeping the airport operable is key while we're doing.
The other thing here too, I mean, quite frankly, I think we have to get to a point where we can use the word runway without it being scary.
Yes.
Right? It's not every discussion around the runway means you're adding capacity. You have a system we have to maintain as well.
I love history, so thank you for asking for us to talk a little about the history of the airport. This was the vision for Friendship International Airport, an airport planned during World War II. And was the first Cold War era airport to open, opened in 1950. And what amazes me, this blows me away as a student of history and aviation history, is the planners had the vision of the future. In this case, they knew jet aircraft were in the future. There were no commercial jet aircraft during World War II, but they knew that they would need runway lengths and widths that would accommodate them. And this was the planning vision for the airport. And what we did too, it's kind of interesting. So it's essentially the master plan. And what you see is the crisscrossing runways, because in that period, crosswinds were very, very sensitive for those aircraft that flew that were tail draggers, the tail wheels on the back rather than the nose wheel. Nose wheel aircraft have much easier way with a crosswind, which is pretty much why all the air carrier today are in that manner. So the other thing which was important, so that's why you have the crisscrossing runways. Interestingly, and during World War II, all military airfields were built just like this. This was the de rigueur. But what they also did is they thought about the future. Well, that's great. When the wind's blowing this way, we're going to land here. When the wind's blowing this way, we're going to land here. And when the wind's blowing this way, we're going to land here, which is the 422. And I'm going to touch on that in just a moment. So what's amazing, so this airport started out with these runways, okay? And that's our primary air carrier runway, 1533. Then our primary air carrier runway, 1028. And then what we had was runway 422. And I'll talk a little bit about it in just a moment here. But what you see in the visioning is they also plan for the future, because runways can only accommodate so many aircraft. And what they realized is, okay, with the property that we are acquiring, it's about 3,600 acres. Just to put that in scale, National Airport is like 670 acres. Okay, Dulles.
Dulles is like 14,000.
Yes, thank you, Ricky. Fifth largest in the world. In terms of landmass, Dulles is fifth. So what's key here is that they knew that parallel runways at capacity. This is something they learned from early civil aviation, military, World War II. And so they included within the footprint of property, what was the capacity of the airport? So they got their crosswinds addressed. They've got capacity addressed in the airport. And of course, here you see the terminal area, just put us in context. What's interesting is the state, of course, purchased it in 1972. And as soon as we did that, so what you see in the dark was the existing conditions that we acquired in 1972. Well, but we had some hubbing operations with Piedmont Airlines and U.S. Airways, and there was a capacity concern. So they had this young engineer, Paul Shank, designed this parallel runway, 15 left, 33 right. And we opened that in 1982. And then in 1990, because of the traffic and the aircraft types that were flying, we did a little extension to it in 1990. So what you see today roughly is a 5,000 foot runway today. But again, the planners saw ahead and said, air carrier, this is what we're going to need. And then lastly, I want to touch on this. This is very important. So here we had an airport then with parallel runway here, the existing air carrier parallel runways here and here, and then we had the crosswind runway 422, which I've landed on, probably the highest crosswind in my entire flying career on that runway. Thank God for that runway. But what's interesting is that for the air traffic control, 422 was far more valuable to them as a taxiway. Because remember, the airliners don't have that same sensitivity to crosswinds. And so the problem is, but they got a problem. They really shouldn't be taxiing airplanes on a runway. There's just operably, there are things you don't do. So working with the FAA, sir, as we embarked upon the runway safety area program over a decade ago now, we agreed with the FAA we would convert that runway to a taxiway. And that added a little bit of capacity, made it more efficient. But it really didn't add capacity, just made it official, because they were already taxiing airplanes on it. So this is just the important thing in terms of the past. The airfield today. So let's just recap. So 15 right, 33 left, runway 1028, and then the small commercial service runway, design group B, commercial service commuter runway, 15 left, 33 right. Those are our runways today as they exist. And what's interesting is I draw a circle around the intersection of the two primary air carrier runways at our airport. So when something happens in that intersection, we lose both runways. We shut the airport down. And so that's one of the Achilles heels of this World War II vision for runways at an airport. Today, the FAA would frown on that and would push back on having intersecting runways. And interesting, I'll show you a picture of how that looks. So the other thing which was important, just in terms of background, is how we use what we have. And so this is very important during the period when the FAA changed the airspace. We had the performance-based navigation, NextGen, came online. Apoplexy occurred with our communities. And working with our communities, we talked an awful lot about how we use the airport. When we have east flow and when we have west flow, as a function of the weather, the winds predominantly, what are our splits and utilizations of the runway? And this was important because we want to make sure the FAA understood. Because we're asking them to redesign the airspace and make it better, be better, sir. And so that took us 6 years to do that. But I think it's just important to identify, and this is VMC means visual meteorological conditions, visual. And then IMC is instrument meteorological conditions, IFR. So you see, it's kind of interesting. So really, we're in instrument condition, very small percent of the time. Most of the time, it's a visual runway. Okay? Same with the west flow, except that the predominant use you see is in west flow versus east flow. Okay. So let's hit on, it's the engineer. It's the curse of the engineer. I got to have numbers. I've got to have my emotions. I've got them, but they've got to be based on facts. So here's where we are today. We're operating at almost 240,000 annual aircraft operations that are carrying 26.2 million passengers. And what's interesting is, and remember, we all talked about COVID and the impacts of COVID. We've turned a page. We're back to where we need to be. In fact, we're 7% greater than we were in 23, and we've overcome the impacts to the Maryland. The other thing which is important is the cargo side of the equation. So we have passengers, but we also have cargo. We have cargo aircraft, but we also have belly freight carried on the domestic aircraft as well, the airliners themselves. 243,300 metric tons. Okay, the other thing which is this, now we get into my world of capacity. So with this configuration, how efficient am I? And what we see is that with this operation today, I average about 1.7 minutes of delay per aircraft operation. Now, the FAA have standards that they set. And you touched upon the master plan component. There's a point at which, oh, we better start thinking, better start really planning for the future. We're not there yet. But what's key is 1.7. The FAA would say is, okay, you're okay till you get to about 6 minutes. Then you need to be doing so. Okay. And beyond that, you're arresting economic growth. You're arresting passenger service. You're hurting your business model. Okay.
So that's not going to creep up on us, right? I mean, we will see that issue as it approaches. What really keeps me up at night, there are a lot of things at an airport to keep you up at night. What really worries me, and I'm going to parrot Wayne, because I know it keeps him up at night as well, if something significant happens at that intersection, mm-hmm. we're going to have a bad day, yeah. and hope it's not a bad week, right? Or a bad couple weeks, because...
We've had a couple.
When he says shut the airport down, we're not talking about like snow removal, right? It's a significant impact, not just here. We've had a conversation with the Southwest Airlines about what we want to do on the runways, and they went, what is it, hyperplectic is the word?
Yeah, they were hyperplectic,
because of the impact that it would have on their system all over the country. So
the delay is on what runway?
So if I want to work in the intersection, the delay is on both runways. Essentially, airport shut down.
Okay, you're talking about when there's construction.
Right, and I've got slides that'll delve into that detail.
Differences between aircraft. We're talking.
This is normal operating with this configuration. We're seeing 1.7 minutes of delay today.
On which runway?
But it's cumulative. It's total. The airport operations could be landing, could be taking off.
Okay.
Great question.
Paul, if I could, what?
Yes, sir.
Forget, I get it, the intersection, that's the intersection, yeah. I understand that issue. But relative to airports like at Reagan National,
yes.
or Boston, or very constrained airports, there's a number of them around the country, where does this fit in that sort of metric? Meaning, does the FAA, they say, yeah, that's bad, whatever the delay is, but it is what it is.
So that's an accurate statement. And so, good example, at Logan Airport, we started looking at, we're going to need some more capacity. And we put in, we had another runway built in, and that took a decade to get through to address that issue of capacity.
Yeah, but actually, I'm just thinking they can't about do it. What just played out at where they're adding more slots.
They're
not.
At National, you're not going to see another runway. You're spot on.
That's exactly.
So what they're doing there, which I thought was very interesting, I thought it was going to come out in the preamble. The FAA are also relying on next gen, on performance-based navigation. Technology is going to solve and add capacity to the existing runway. And you notice my friends who've served all these years with these roundtable, and we're all shaking our head. Yeah, good luck. But that's the FAA's mindset.
Paul?
Yes.
Talk about the daily average one rate delay, 6 minutes. FAA sets the 6 minute standard. What causes runway delay?
More operations. Let's just give an example. So if an airplane lands here and there's one waiting to take off here, obviously they can't begin the takeoff roll until that airplane clears that intersection. That's a great example. And so literally click, tick, tick, tick. And what's funny is sometimes the pilots, they're human beings and they'll putz around getting through the intersection. So you'll hear the FAA pushing them to, hey, take this exit, not this exit.
So that's an example of an aircraft-driven delay.
Yes.
Are there airport-driven delays?
There could be. There could be maintenance break, but this is dealing with aircraft operations.
Also,
thank you. That's a great question for us.
Well, once they land, they have to go somewhere, right? Insufficient gate capacity, for example.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. You're waiting
at
the gate. And that's another example. So some airlines, they're very strategic. They'll want to make that first turn off. So here they've slowed down like crazy and they're putzing around through the intersection because they want to get through that one because they're going over here. They don't want to go down to here because then they got to taxi that distance. It's all about time. That's a wonderful question.
Just to point out, they're slowing down because we don't have high-speed taxiways at BWI.
That's true.
That would be nice. Because that saves 10 to 30 seconds on every retrieval.
The challenge, a wonderful comment, is the challenge is that with high-speed taxiways, you have to have the parallel taxiway far enough away that you can put in the high-speed. That's our problem. It's interesting the thing the visionaries thought of and the things they just completely missed. I mean, that's a reality. We're very close. Our taxiways we're constrained, despite 3,800 acres, a lot of acreage. Okay, and as you saw on the brief slide, we can do a lot within it. But there are some areas that's going to cost us. All right, I'm going to move on to this because this gets to the comments that were coming up with the group. So this is a discussion about single commercial runway delay for maintenance. Okay, maintenance impacts. So when we have to shut down a runway for operational or maintenance needs, aircraft has a flat tire, which has happened, or a piece of pavement needs to be taken care of by maintenance. Well, we don't have a backup runway. We're down to one runway. There's no backup. We lose that, the airport's closed, okay? And if it's in the intersection, the entire airport is already closed. We do not have a backup because they cannot use that design group B3 small commercial service runway. It's just not long enough, just not wide enough, and is not built to the standards required for commercial air carrier aircraft that would be flying. So what this means is, so you hit on it, Mr. Smith, when you said on flight schedules are extending later and later. So we've had this conversation as well. They're now doing red-eye flights. Okay? And so it used to be that Wayne could give me 7 hours of closure. I could do a lot in 7 hours. 8 hours is even better. Now the airlines are talking 5 hours because we're flying. There's only about 5 hours, and really it's 4 hours. But they can adjust their schedule and maybe squeeze us in, give me an hour. But
that's 4 hours was to mobilize, do what you're going to do, and then demobilize.
Yeah. And that was a great comment. I remember that came out.
So the shorter window means, okay, that increases in the number of daytime closures. So this was so much fun, Secretary Weidenfeld, in the conversations with carriers, when we talked about the intersection and if we want to repave that intersection, I invoked the old saying that you used many years ago, over a decade ago. We're telling you today, you're going to have a snow event a year from today. If you remember that, they could get that. They wrapped their brains right around it and gave us a blessing, right? And I mean, it was a spectacular metaphor. And they got it. Today, I tried to use that same line to go, for 5 hour stops. That's it. No closures. We can't do that. We're not shutting down for a couple of days. And that was why in the runway rehab presentation, CTP, is we're still working with the airlines. What is the acceptable closure? And then I'm telling our boss, can I give you the quality of pavement? And also to Mr. Pinnell for ops and maintenance, can I give you a good enough piece of pavement with that little small window of closure? So this was very important, is that it's problematic. And we literally calculated, as we're studying the closure periods, 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours, and 2 days, which is what we did over a decade ago. We closed it down for 2 days, 54 hours. So
the runway.
Yes, runway. So 130,000 to 300,000 passengers are impacted. That's the revenue hit for some closure to do major maintenance. Okay. And it just depends on what that duration is, which one it is. But what was important is that we as engineers, we had to walk in the airline shoes because that's revenue lost. We literally then calculated what is that revenue. So we're telling them, this one's going to be 23 million. This one's 27 million. We're giving what our numbers say it is. And that was important just because we have to have a basis for what we're going to recommend. So we get down. So now here's the part. So when we get down to, all right, we're going to close 10 to 8 and repave it. We're just going to mill off 3 inches and put down 3 inches of asphalt, and you caught it. And we're going to replace, upgrade the lights to LED. Take out the light bulb, put in a new light bulb on each of the runway lights. So what we said is, well, geez, we're 20 minutes of delay. Remember, 6 minutes is begin to have apoplexy. Okay, by 2026. So the pressure was on us. Thank you. Our CEO was like, boy, you got to get it done in 25. And so we were like, hey, we're geared up. We can get this done. We're in design, sir. We can come up with a solution. Well, the airline's blinked, though. And so they're like, well, maybe we're not ready for a snowstorm in a year from now. So what we're saying is, well, it only gets worse. The longer you kick the can down the road, it only gets more difficult.
That's based on what projections?
Projections of aircraft growth.
By who?
And by the airlines, the
so
fleet.
You use the FAA's projections. You're using the airline's projections.
The schedule, that's the great question. So the FAA give us forecasts out 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. The airlines will tell me a couple years, year. And so if there's a short term that's airline, and then there's a long term that's FAA, but the airlines are looking at it too.
And this is based on the airlines, you're saying?
Because of the short term, we're talking about the airlines. But we're using FAA information because we can only use what they give us. They analyze it and then they give us feedback, agree, disagree. And what's key here is that what we presented to them, if you delay this, if you delay going to the doctor, it's only going to be more painful.
Well, okay. I mean, we're not doing the AV project for nothing, right? I mean, Southwest wants more capacity so that they can have more, they can handle more passengers.
They want more they want capacity via a runway extension on 33, right?
They did not say that. But okay. They ask for more terminal capacity.
Okay.
So that they can run. Right now, we don't have a runway capacity issue.
That's a more
capacity issue. So they want more terminal capacity. So they can run more flights through here. So the point is, if they ramp up operations, closing the runway, that 20-minute number gets worse when you have more operations.
And I think the story here, which is why this is so full of text, is I'd love to give you the real deal. The real deal is that we've actually projected Well, by 2026, given what forecast ops are, also shared with the airlines, so they see what we're looking at. And what we said is, hey, you're going to start experiencing delays at other airports that want to land here. So you got this, when it gets fouled up at one airport, you'll see it reflect other airports. And a good example of that, oh my goodness, we had a trip down to corporate headquarters. They had thunderstorms hit Dallas-Fort Worth. Only DFW wiped them out. It destroyed their schedule. It was comical. In fact, it was kind of funny. I had to come home by United because it couldn't work it.
Oh, this, I could.
What, sir?
What they're projecting the short term, what are they saying about the availability of aircraft, both their current aircraft and just the market in general? How does that influence, in particular, the short term?
Yeah.
I mean, was that in that equation?
So they are aware of what their fleet size is and what their projected fleet size growth is, and that's something that Jordan gets when he interacts with them on the air service side, but also my planning side do. We were just briefed on that. Airline orders are up, but deliveries are delayed, as you're aware.
Hey, that's my
flight. It was interesting. There was a huge shortage of pilots and flight crew, and it looked like that was going to be a cause of delay.
That's not an issue for me. I mean, so right. Correct. But the availability of aircraft is one issue, and that would certainly suppress growth. But they've also signaled that they're going to run more of their existing.
Exactly. They're flying more. They're flying longer. They're now going to do red eyes. Thank you for weighing in on that. Okay, so where does this go? Is that, as we talked about those runways, it isn't just 10-28, it's just the first of the runways that need something done to it. The pavement management plan says all of them need to be dealt with. So what we're saying is three major rehabilitation projects are currently in the pavement management plan to be done over the next 10 years, okay, as we're reaching capacity at the airport. Just as growth for the FA curve. What's important is that if Wayne had his way, he wants us to keep two runways open all the time. We're a two-runway airport, okay, to keep those delays at reasonable levels. And the airlines, if they were in the room with us, including retire, would agree. That would be ideal. Okay. So let's just talk about this, because really when you're talking about capacity of an airport, it's the competitive capacity of the airport too. So here is our airport, and here is a friendly little airport across the river. Okay. And what's key, I'm just going to quickly recap the Delta. So two air carrier runways that intersect. Ultimate capacity, remember I said we were about 240,000 ops we can handle. Our calculated mathematical capacity is about 340,000, okay? Our friends across the river, with their four primary air carrier runways, their ultimate capacity is 600,000 operations. And currently they're at 252,000, and this is what's key. We're at 71% of capacity today, okay? Dulles, with its four runways, is at 42% of capacity today. And so that really, it's food for thought, and I thought this was important. Thank you, in terms of the team. So Dulles right now has on the books, we heard this past summer, a $700 million expansion program for cargo and shipping, and it was to your earlier comment. Dulles is the fifth largest airport in the world. Unlike BWI Marshall, and especially unlike Reagan National, it has a lot of room to grow, and its leaders have big plans. When you talk about capacity, you're talking about competition. You're talking about economics. And so,
if I could.
Yes, sir.
I mean, the reality is this has been the same math relatively the last 25 years. Right. I mean, they've always had this tremendous capacity. We've always had the limitations we have. Yeah. And Reagan has too. And guess what? They keep funneling things in there. So I appreciate it. Definitely is something we should keep in mind. But I don't think it's just simple math either. I think there's a lot of other factors that drive.
There are a lot of other factors
that drive this.
Well, does National have parallel runways?
No.
It's intersected?
It's like World War II.
Really?
Yeah.
They'll get one.
How many other airports our size are intersecting? Is that pretty common or not?
It, mainly because every city, by and large, built their facilities during the war years, and the commercial airliners in that period had tailwinds. So they have the crisscrossing runways.
Over the last 15, 20 years, we've been pushing runway safety area programs to decouple runways, to separate runways, to parallel runways. It's very expensive to do it all over the country. Some airports are making progress than others.
And one thing you'll notice how Dulles's crosswind runway does not cross its runways. This is the ideal for the FAA in their minds. Do not have that risk of conflict where if something happens in that circle, you're shut down. Yes,
ma'am. I just have to say that your comment that when we're talking capacity, we're talking about market share, I disagree with wholeheartedly. And I find it shocking that we're comparing our airport to Dulles. I don't think anyone that I've talked to in the legislature views BWI as the next Dulles. We have very different market share here. We have different market share than Reagan. We're different airports, and we serve different communities, and we coexist with different communities. And I don't want that point to be lost. I just have to say that for the record, for anyone who's listening who finds this, you know, shocking.
I'll react to that. There's a lot of truth there. However, to some degree, we do see Dulles as a competing airport, primarily on domestic travel. But Southwest isn't making a decision here based on what's going on at Dulles in terms of how they assign their aircraft. You're right. We should probably be more concerned about Nashville, Midway, for example, than Washington Dulles. So if we do compete with Washington Dulles because we want passengers that can make a decision go either way to choose us. But in terms of airfield capacity and operations, our hub carriers isn't deciding when they're going to come here. Dulles, hopefully, well, we hope we don't get to that point, because if we get to a point where 71% becomes 83%, and Southwest decides that this is still an important region to them, it is not, you know, unforeseeable that they may not see that capacity at Dulles and decide, let's start shifting some operation there. It's not unimaginable. But right now that they're
also there's economic development aspect of this. You know, we've seen Maryland business for two decades going to Northern Virginia. Dulles Carter. So it's really a container argument. Can you maintain or increase service, or how do you compete? So I think economic development is part of the discussion.
Quite a couple air traffic control discussions, modernizations going on with towers. Connecting the dots on the recent meeting we had with some of FAA's leadership. In the modernization of the national airspace, there's a lot of discussion about what does it look like for modernizing the air traffic control system, including the possibility of using remote towers and things like that. So are we in that dialogue in any way? And is BWI in consideration, or maybe I wouldn't say at risk, but maybe we'll be subject to some of the changes that are being considered in that space?
Certainly the FAA is looking to how they can use technology to improve efficiency and capacity. That's clear. And by default, and maintain safety. It has to be safe, whatever they do. AI has not come up in the conversation, but the FAA are looking at AI. They are doing test flying with AI. As you know, the pilotless aircraft that exists. We've got general aviation aircraft. You can push a button and it will find the nearest airport, communicate the situation, and land at that airport while avoiding traffic in the air.
We've not had that conversation. Yeah. We just went through a sighting, tower sighting exercise with them. It's about a 3-year process. And they worked with us to sight a new tower here at the airport, and that topic did not come up in those discussions.
Yeah, I guess my question's actually more related to the concept of, and again, I know there's some discussions that are against this, but consolidating traffic towers so you don't necessarily have to have ATC on town. That could be, those capabilities could be provided by higher density tower capacity. So I don't know if we're in that conversation.
Well, they didn't do it in the towers in our metropolitan area, but they did do it with the radar approach control, TRACON.
Yeah.
We had a TRACON right here. Now it's all over in Virginia, and it handles all the airports in the Port of Washington metropolitan areas. So they have done that, some consolidation.
So I have two quick comments. One, it's about the three airports in the region. I remember when the slot control issue at National Reagan was being discussed, our congressional delegations talked about how there's three different airports for three different missions and three different markets. And that's the way the system was designed. I know that's not exactly perfect because you described it as there are opportunities for airlines to move between the two. We worry about passengers moving between the two. But I've always thought that when we look at that market share of the region, it's not quite the right metric. But that's something that we can discuss later. Maybe the right metric is, like you said, maybe it's Nashville Midway. I don't know. But I agree that showing Dulles, which was designed away from the metro area with all that land and our constraints, it's interesting, but it's not dispositive.
UWI was designed away from everything.
That's right. Sure.
Well, things changed.
Well, I'd like to see communities that were here before this airport.
It was still
that's another topic. The second point I wanted to make is, you know, we've talked today, roadways have been the topic in a sort of roundabout way in almost everything. We have safety issues, which we cannot ignore, maintenance issues and infrastructure maintenance that we absolutely have to pay attention to. And then there is this boogeyman of capacity expansion that has all of the complex issues that I think we all have to grapple with now in our new configuration. So I would say that this is one of those interesting, not to be ignored, has to be addressed, but can't fully be intelligently discussed until we have a balanced way to do it. But we have to get to that. So this really is stressing the urgency of getting to that place so we can make these decisions rationally.
The point in all of this conversation, and I think Paul's almost done, is it's a complicated issue, mm-hmm. with a lot of factors. Mm-hmm. This was saying, I'm sure Paul's used it many times, if you've seen one airport.
You've seen one airport.
That's just the way it is. And, you know, the public's going to make a decision on what we do, ultimately, right? It's not a decision that MAA is going to make, not a decision that the secretary is going to make. There's going to be a lot of players in this decision, but a decision is going to have to be made down the road. Either we address the future capacity issue or we don't. We want to approach it from a very responsible approach. And that's the point here, is that, you know, you have some very smart people who are concerned about all the things that we're all concerned about, and all of that's being factored into this decision, but it's not an insignificant decision.
Okay.
Granted.
Yes, I just had one final point too, for everyone to keep in mind. Paul did mention that it took about six years for us to get those airspace changes. Those changes were really minor. We were given a very short period of time to enter the PBN working group that was convened at DC Metroplex. We did get some changes out of that, but and Southwest flew them and tested them for us, was a great partner. But any change to the capacity, the features, length of another runway will absolutely require an entire redesign of the airspace. We have already proven as a state, we have absolutely zero leverage or control to tell the FAA what to do with that airspace. I cannot stress enough what we dealt with in at the roundtable meetings for those 6 years, Paul, you did too. It was incredible. And that was for a very small portion of people, relatively, who had unbelievable impacts. A lengthening a change to 33 right and creating a dual configuration on those runways will be unbelievable.
Or 1028. It's going to be amazingly contentious.
It will be. I can just, and the airport, for the commission to keep in mind, is liable for those health or for those noise impacts legally. That's a Supreme Court decision. The FAA has no liability. The airlines have none. So we, to promote our airport, must keep that in mind.
All right, thank you, Paul. I mean, again, this is, you can have a very long conversation, but it was helpful just to get some of the history in particular.
Thank you, Paul.
All righty.
Good afternoon, everyone.
On a lighter note.
Annette Fisher, Chief Marketing Officer, Maryland Aviation Administration. So customers are making a decision because we, in June.
Yes, they are.
Record for over 27 million passengers coming to the airport. And then, on September 16th, the governor made another announcement about the second consecutive busiest airport with over 2.7 million. So, numbers are in the pudding. This is just some of the news media coverage that we receive, DWI being the busiest month, and we are still celebrating the second consecutive month ever.
Despite their good news.
Congratulations, DWI.
I want to temper this a little bit because Jordan's going to come up and he's going to show a capacity slide, right?
Let's talk in that. All right, so moving to our Summer Youth Initiative, we celebrated 8 years in July and bringing 50 students to the city from the city's recreation and parks. The students learned about careers in aviation here at BWI Marshall, and it was a tremendous success. We're looking to expand the program and hopefully to offer this opportunity to more students throughout the year.
So expanding meaning taking that 50 and allocating it to the county.
And clarifying. That'd be nice. And this is just some of the news coverage that we received showcasing the students having a great time. And we are just preparing for the next generation of leaders. The program is geared to inspire and motivate our students. And if you missed the action, we do have a video here.
Very nice. Well done.
Lastly, Ricky did a great interview with Jane Miller. If you remember, Jane Miller was the investigative reporter for WBAL. She has moved from TV to radio, and we had a chance to highlight a lot of the great things we're doing here at the airport. Ricky talked about the outreach efforts that we're doing for the upcoming master plan. And it was a great show. So we did put it up on our LinkedIn page, and we can also send the link as well if anyone's interested.
I've never been more excited to talk to an investigator.
She wanted you to come inside the studio, but you traveled. So, all right, any questions? All right, I'll welcome Jordan, Kalo to the mic.
All right, we have our fun chart. Monthly for the last year, red is what's going on this year, the gray is what happened last year, and the yellow is the year-over-year growth. So we're looking now into the future at capacity through March, so through the second quarter of the calendar year. You see some red negative numbers this quarter, though. As discussed briefly, Southwest is not having much luck getting airplanes from Boeing, who's on strike. First, they couldn't deliver, and now they're on strike. So you see negative capacity numbers this month, next month, through January. So that's kind of a winter thing, and kind of we don't have enough airplanes as we expected. So we're looking at lower capacity this quarter. It kicks back up in the spring when they are starting to get some airplanes and reconfiguring what they're doing. Red eyes start then too, when they're increasing their efficiency. So they'll get, they're saying 16 more airplanes just from increasing efficiency. But so we expect with capacity down, we're not going to see stellar numbers this winter for passengers. So we're 6% down for the fourth quarter and flat for the first quarter, but most of that is an increase in spring break time. Here is our airline capacity share. So Southwest still nearly three quarters. This is for this quarter. We see Spirit still at number two. There's been lots of rumors about Spirit, so I guess I should address that. Spirit refinanced a lot of their debt during COVID, and they owe a $1 billion payment in about 11 months, 10 months, 11 months. As part of that, they have to have certain financial covenants with their credit card company, and that kicks in a year before the bond debt was due, which was last month. So the credit card company was going to make them withhold a lot of cash to be able to cover their credit cards. Now, the credit card company realized that that would kind of kill the company, so they've extended that for a couple months, and now that deadline's through about Christmas. But Spirit is very deep in negotiations to refinance this debt and get a way out of it. Probably everyone's saying the way out of it is to do a prefabricated bankruptcy, Chapter 11 restructuring. And as of yesterday, the merger with Frontier might be back on. So that was the initial merger that they were talking about, which made a lot more sense because they had the same kind of business model and aircraft types. And they both announced all these new bundle packages, which is because the chief marketing officer from Spirit went to Frontier. So they both have the same packages now because they both came from the same guy. But that's the update on Spirit. We don't think it's going to affect us very much. We're more affected by the fact that their engines don't work from Pratt & Whitney, and they have 25 aircraft grounded waiting for engine parts. But even if they go through this prepackaged bankruptcy, they will probably continue the operations at the level they expected. But you're probably hearing things about that in the news, and that's as much as we know. Meanwhile, their potential merger partner Frontier, they're flip-flopped with United last week for capacity in this quarter. They're going back and forth. Frontier likes to put a lot of capacity out there and make adjustments about a month or two ahead of that schedule. So they pulled back a lot of capacity around the holidays this past week and slipped back a digit there, or a 0.1%. Questions on any of that before I go on? So in terms of overall capacity for this quarter, we are leading Dulles by a couple tenths of a percentage point there. If you recall, DCA has slot controls. We talked about that. They're going to get five more flights, so that'll increase them a little bit. But pretty much capacity at Reagan is steady throughout the year because of those slot controls, whereas we and Dulles kind of surge in the summer and pull back a little in the winter. So I think
last time they got some slots, it actually hit IAD more than it hit BWI.
Yeah, that's probably true. So I have a feeling we'll be doing a fresh analysis on that. But yeah, so I think in Q1, DCA is number one here, and we're both Dulles and us are slipping back a little bit. But for Q4, we're still ahead. We reset the clock on our new destinations. So far in fiscal year 25, we've had two new ones announced, and that's for Southwest. They're going to start doing red eyes to Sacramento. Actually, their new flight at Reagan National is a direct flight. It's nonstop to Las Vegas, and then it continues direct to Sacramento. So we get Sacramento twice that way. Well, that area does. And then we have Air Canada, who suspended service. They've now said that they're coming back May 1st. So we're excited about that and the possibility of the international connections that brings. So I just came back from a big conference where I was doing air service development. I met with 20 airlines, and we hope to have more announcements soon, but nothing immediately pending right now. Southwest and Spirit aren't the only ones having aircraft issues in terms of getting things to be able to expand. So it's a worldwide phenomenon with Boeing and Pratt & Whitney and Rolls-Royce having issues. So this is our historical, looking backwards now, passenger traffic. So we did set that record in June. Does this work? And we eked it out in July for the busiest month ever here. In August, we have preliminary numbers right now, and it's a little bit lower, and the percent growth is lower as well, so it's 4%. We're actually starting to see September numbers right now, and it looks like we're going to be dead flat total passengers for September as we go into what we saw with the capacity going down. And then this is the most recent data we have available from EMWA on the other two airports. You see for our record month in July, we had 34.8, and Dulles had 34.9 because they also set a record in July. And it was about two planes worth of passengers more than us. So we hope to continue to overturn that and take it better. But last year, we were about a whole percentage point ahead of them. So they had a lot of international expansion at Dulles this summer. And then internationally, we did set a new record for the fiscal year for the most international traffic we ever had. You see, there's a lot of 20% growth over the winter. We had three different carriers flying to Cancun, Southwest twice a day, Spirit and Frontier also once a day, Frontier with their giant 230-seat aircraft. But Spirit and Frontier have pulled those back significantly now. Cancun apparently hit its limit at some point. When I was at US Airways, you could never put enough capacity into Cancun. It would just keep going. So now you see in the last few months, we're down double digits in capacity. We're not, I think we're more in the 10% down for September than the big hit we saw in August. But our international carriers are doing super well. And cargo is following industry trends, which are kind of hovering above and below the flat line, depending on the month. So as we're mostly dependent on Amazon here, you guys got to keep ordering stuff. I know people are, as we said, for about a year now, shopping more in brick and mortar stores. So not as much going through Amazon as during the height of the pandemic. I think we're actually getting the mail contract switched from UPS to FedEx or what, I forget which way as I stand here, but we're seeing like 2,000% increase in the mail in the last couple of months. So, but that's a tiny percentage of Amazon packed. But we count it separately, so it looks good. Total operations continue to be up compared to last year, which means in landed weight is up a little more, which means we are seeing bigger aircraft than we saw last year. Southwest is getting deliveries. The ones they are getting are all of their larger 800 series aircraft. And the 700s that are smaller are retiring. So the average size of Southwest here is getting bigger. But we also have carriers like Iceland Air and Copa are giving us MAX 9s instead of MAX 8s that they had before. So everybody showing us higher gauge, more gauge. We like gauge. That's what I got today. Yes, sir.
Unless there are questions, can we talk a little bit about Southwest's announcement during their stockholders?
Sure. So Southwest... everyone was expecting all kinds of exciting announcements during their investor day. They did make a couple with respect to their network, which are important for us. I already talked about the efficiency. They're going to try and take 5 minutes out of every turn. If you walk through the terminal here or if you're flying, you'll see all these information boards next to the gates that are about 6 months old. You probably had them at O'Hare like 30 years ago, but Southwest has them now, and they're thinking that'll help them get 5 minutes off each turn, which for their system, I said, creates 16 more aircraft than they have without buying anything else. That's also the red eye flag that makes things more efficient for them. So they outlined that in great detail, how they're going to be more efficient. But they also announced their first partnership with foreign carriers. So their first one's going to be with Iceland Air. They've had a cargo relationship with them back since the 90s, and that's why Iceland Air was the first one. And so for the time being, Iceland Air will be able to sell tickets connecting at BWI Marshall to the rest of Southwest networks. It'll take a little longer for us folks who have Southwest frequent flyers miles to be able to buy tickets on Iceland there. And that's because Southwest still can't take foreign currency. So they're working on that. But we're excited about this partnership. And when I was at the conference, I spent a lot of time talking with Southwest about what that means for us, right? Kind of secret, but all the limitations on these partnerships depend on the pilot's contract that they have. They're allowed to have up to 375 transatlantic passengers connect to them per day and 875 from Asia. So expect that they're talking to Asian carriers as well. And we hope that means Asian carriers will come to BWI Marsh. But they've already announced that they have one other carrier that should happen in 2025. Iceland Air is going to start happening. They'll start selling tickets, I think, in the first or second quarter next year, or travel probably a quarter after that. And so we're expecting another carrier. And if you look around BWI, the other potential carriers, you can probably do some deduction and figure out that it's a German carrier. But we're hoping that. There's all the, also this issue they announced they're going to assign seats, right? So that's going to start happening. They have to do all kinds of, I think, 36 systems they have to upgrade to be able to make that happen. And so the carriers that they're talking to about interlining and code sharing have to decide whether they want to do that before the assigned seats happen or if they want to wait for the assigned seats to be implemented so that they can assign seats like they're used to doing. So that's going to be a trade-off that each carrier is going to have to make separately as to whether they want to do the IT investment on their end twice, once before and once after the assigned seating happens. So I have a feeling some of them might wait until the assigned seats are out there. So that's exciting that for their revenue, they'll be able to have extra legroom seats and assigned seats and be able to charge for that. I think that's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Yes.
So the strike is Southwest has always, yeah, it's always had an advantage because they've had one aircraft, right?
Sure.
In terms of parts and that kind of thing. So they're transitioning from 737-800 to a MAX, right?
Correct.
So that's what's slowing down is the delivery of the new planes to replace the old fleet. Is that what the strike is?
Yeah. So if you have an old plane and you're looking to replace it, you're probably going to time that so that either the lease is up or probably there's a big maintenance event that costs millions of dollars for that airplane. And so now that there's a delay, they have to decide if they want to spend the millions of dollars for this heavy check to get the maintenance up on that airplane or if it's easier just to get rid of it. And I think at some, they're kind of going back and forth a little bit, I think, depending on the plane and who owns it and all that stuff. So I think they're keeping more of them and doing the maintenance that more than they expected, but still retiring a lot of them. They also said at the investor day, they expect to be all Boeing MAX planes by 2030-ish, I think. Something like much sooner than that.
How is their London flight doing? I saw that.
Which London flight?
The Southwest is going to London now.
No.
I saw a poster coming in.
In the tunnel?
Yeah.
That's for BA. But oh, I mean, BA's are like
South. Yeah.
So when I talk about the Southwest Pilot Union, it has all these limits.
Southwest.
No, there's no airlines on the way. Yeah. The reason that the Southwest Pilots Union has all these limits is because Southwest Pilots Union wants Southwest to buy wide body airplanes so that they can fly them, which isn't really in Southwest business. But so we'll see. At this point, they're saying they're going to co-chair.
Very good.
Thank you. All right. Thank you all.
Mark.
Harold, next.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hello, Harold.
Thank you, Jordan. All right. To those online, pardon my back, I apologize. I've been preparing you guys for this slide for almost 6 months now. Right. We typically talk about our operations and our statistics, our revenue. You're going to see a lot of red. Right. This is directly due to the runway rehab that we just finished. Okay. So looking at quarter one, for our statistics, total flight operations, gallons sold, retail, and that respective revenue, we're down 46% in operation counts, 34 and 36 respectively for gallons sold and that revenue. Mostly due to July, right? Completely shut down in July with the exception of about 10 days. So we only had 96, and this is specific to our business jet, right? I've always been talking to you guys about business aviation, but not only 96 of those dead. All right, so for Q1, looking at last fiscal year versus now, you can see the difference, right? We only had 16,000 this year with 190,000 gallons sold retail and a respective $1 million of revenue. You can see the difference versus previous fiscal year. Now, airport construction was a big one. Also, some fleet repositioning for some of our tenants, as well as our air traffic control tower staffing. Right, we touched on it for a second earlier. We're not FAA control. We don't have FAA controllers. We have contract controllers. That company is having some staffing issues, and so they push and pull them some temporary. Not to the point where it's going to impact safety in any way, right? But a lot of those redundant operations with the flight schools, right? When that airspace gets congested, they will send them to other nearby airports just to make sure that there aren't any issues. So that affects some of our operation numbers. And then obviously the economic climate. So business jet operations, what my big focus is with you guys, I'm going to stick on it for forever, is also down, right? Again, versus our previous fiscal year for all the reasons we just discussed. And you can see what our numbers are, 96 in July, 377, and then 337. Now, we expect them to start coming back up, right? We just got through, even though we had the full closure in July, we were still dealing with those overnight closures that we discussed, right? So that impacted those numbers as well. We're just getting past that now, so we should see them starting to trend up. However, what dropped this morning, one of our main base tenants, one of our 135 operators, charter operators, Grandview Aviation, has just sold its assets to Wheels Up. Okay, Wheels Up, for those of you who don't know, yes, private jet operation, correct. They are backed by Delta. Delta's been throwing money into them for a while now, and they're trying to modernize their fleet. So Grandview Aviation has some Phenom aircraft. So Wheels Up has purchased those. We do not know at this point if they're going to remain based at Martin or not. So if they are moved elsewhere, right, that will affect our operations for business jet, right, our costs. However, it wouldn't be reflected too much in our revenue. Because they're allowed to sell fuel, our gallons sold wouldn't change based on their operations, okay? And so that's where we stand as of right now for our first quarter. Any questions? Yes, sir.
Are you concerned that some of the folks that have gone other places may not come back? And then are there any things that you guys are doing marketing-wise to promote the changes and renovations that have been done to potentially bring some new folks in?
Yes. So the first question, though, those who have left or had to reposition have returned. To the second question, yes, are we doing anything different? We are targeting the folks that are operating at business jet aircraft, business aviation in our region, right? So we are able to see exactly who's coming into to BWI Signature on a daily basis, right? Our number for business jet of 810 over these 3 months, BWI is 5,300. So there are folks who are flying into this area who we can target individually, and we're going to start doing that now. Any other questions?
Harold, if you could, yes, if you could prepare a correspondence from me. I'm assuming the FAA is managing the staffing issue, right? That's their, right, at the tower?
Yes.
It's under their contract. Of our concern for that, obviously from a safety perspective and eventually from a business perspective, but more importantly from a safety perspective, I don't want to be solid on that. I think they've got to got to manage it better.
Yeah.
So if you could do that for me, I appreciate it. Thank
you. Yes, sir. Will do. I will say as a blanket statement, there aren't any for the thresholds that are in place, right? They aren't at that number. But what you are seeing, right, is like our tower manager, right, who is supposed to be just doing the administrative. He's filling in shifts as a controller, things of that nature.
It's a concern.
Yes, sir. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Carol, one more. I know you get added traffic when things like Preakness come in. Did you get any additional traffic for the Maryland Five-Star last weekend by any chance?
No, we didn't see anything for that. We are, once again, to your point of Preakness, going to be a major sponsor and promote it. We're looking at doing some events potentially with some of the chambers of commerce to try to drive some of that, as well as other events that are happening in there. Okay. Thank you.
I have the exciting, I have the pleasure to bring you the exciting news on Code of Maryland regulation changes. So in February of this year, we brought to the commission a request to amend Code of Maryland Regulation 1103-0109, which pertains to security badges at the airport. What we had done was we have requested permission from you to increase our fees related to security badges, specifically badges that are lost or stolen or not returned by the air carriers. As stated to you earlier in February, this hasn't changed since 1993. What we have requested in the Code of Maryland regulation is to go from $25 per lost badge to keep it at 25 for the first, and then we go to 50 for any recurrent lost badges by an individual. Generally speaking, if somebody loses a badge three times at the airport, they're no longer working at the airport. We will pull their badges. In addition, we have requested that we add a $100 fee to air carriers that fail to return badges of employees that have left the employment of that company. You approved that. It has gone through the process, and we are now asking if you will approve it to move forward.
To put in place. You approved
put in place.
Going through the process, the public process. Gotten comments.
No, changing code work.
No changes to the. No changes from the open comment process.
No changes.
Okay. Is there a motion to
so move?
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, folks.
Great. You're up.
All right. Oh, there you go, sir.
We're not used to moving the machine, so you may need some help. This thing works.
I think you pointed out a change forward for you. There should be a laser. Is that one of the laser guys?
Yep.
That's the laser. So forward right here. Back
right here. Laser there. All right. Well, thank you.
You got it.
Thanks for that. Well, thanks for taking time to listen to what we've been working on. So staff at the MAA has been working on a framework for quite a while to come up with a policy mechanism for us to decide how to make all of these consequential decisions within the context of what our legislation requires us to do. It's not something that we have an option in. It's required. And we know that that is a complex, complicated effort. Before we start, and Ricky mentioned it, everyone should realize we are responsible for it at this commission, because there was prior legislation that would have created a separate commission to look at infrastructure at the airport and make recommendations to the General Assembly around health impacts of infrastructure. That was opposed by aviation interests, was opposed by the department at that time. And so one of the arguments made by those in opposition was there's already a commission. It's this commission. So we now, those of us here at the Maryland Aviation Commission, now have this responsibility. It's probably appropriately placed because we are also making a broad range of policy prescriptions for our airport. And in the course of that, we will have to incorporate all of the complexity that is required to manage a public airport in a very dense populated area in a state with great long-term potential, but in the immediate term, fiscal and economic challenge. We have a lot of things to manage. So this is just a recap of what we've all seen before. I think Paul Shank and I gave this presentation in February, where we looked at, on the left side, for those of us in the audience, what the roundtable came up with as a potential risk of operations relative to health at the airport, using data from the MAA and from the Neighborhood Environmental Survey from the FAA. And what we saw then, and I'm going to see if I actually learned my lesson well enough, is that the current policy says there should be roughly 13 to 23% of people who are highly annoyed, which means they are
at risk of having adverse health outcomes from our operations here. And that was what we assumed was the current policy. Looking at new numbers and incorporating the National Environmental Survey, the MAA, and this is what we presented last February, shows that we are probably at the low end already above where in the older construct, there would be an impact on the population. So once again, without belaboring this, and there's something covering up here, stop sharing is what I think I would like to see removed, if you can do that. Thank you. So based on that survey, using the current federal and state assumptions regarding harmful aviation noise, our region is possibly, and once again, this is tentative because we're not the scientists doing it. The FAA is still looking at a national noise policy. All of this is subject to change. More likely than not, will change as we're going through our process. But rather than wait for that, because we have responsibility, we're acting. Because we have responsibilities to protect the airport, economics model of the airport, and our residents. So we're acting. If I'm doing this right again, I guess without that, I'm not sure if it'll work.
There you go.
About that little thing that's up.
Yep. Let's see if we do it this way.
So I got to do it over there?
Maybe not.
Well, that makes me feel better. A pro like you can't do it.
Well, me being a pro, but you know.
It's basic enough. Thank you, Stacy. Will you advance those? Thank you so much. Thanks for that. Next slide, please. So this is a quote, and someone said, what's the attribution of that? Well, the attribution is really Dr. Zafari and myself. And we started using this when we were working at the roundtable on the airspace changes because we were finding that the data was just inadequate to make good decisions. And so we said one day, it's impossible to make good policy in the absence of good data. And everybody nodded because that's so obvious, right? And so for us to be able to make good policy, we have to improve our data, both collection and analysis. Thank you. Next one. So this is what I think we all have seen from the legislation. In carrying out our duties, we're responsible for balancing and managing all of these very important issues, the aviation aspect, economic, business, environmental, health, and also any community-related impacts or other impacts that this commission finds to be pertinent. Whew. That's a big list. Next, please. So this one is a little dense, but basically it says that at the first paragraph, we have this responsibility. Second paragraph, we need some kind of tool. And the tool has to be designed to weigh all of these relevant issues, regulatory and capital, so we can make decisions, so that we can assist the MAA in making the decisions they have to make to manage the business we're asking them to manage. So once again, it's related to the fact that we all have responsibilities and we have to work together on those responsibilities. And to assist the MAA staff in this important but difficult endeavor, that's this last one, Dr. Zafar and I went back. It was fun because we're basically nerds and academics. I'll speak for myself in that regard. And we just basically closed our mind, talked to people, looked at the data, looked at research and say, how are these things supposed to be done? And so what you're about to see, and Dr. Zafari will describe it, is a conceptual way to create a forecasting tool that we can use as we make decisions. Now, it's not the be-all or the end-all, because obviously we have independent decision power, but it will be a powerful tool if we do it right. If we get it right, it could be a tool to be a great assist in what we have to do. And so that's what we're trying to achieve.
Thank you.
You want this or not?
Thank you. So, and I think as part of that, what is needed, I think historically what has happened is the focus was on, these are the different components that you see on the far left, that basically are needed if you have a system-wide approach. Historically, you would inflate one of these balloons and the rest of them would be deflated somehow. Because I think it's important to, when we think about policy designs and policy plans,
in advance we think about all these domains and the interactions of them. I mean, scientifically, some of these domains have overlap, and that's, I mean, that's important to note. And this is just a rough draft of, you know, what needs to be considered. And those, you know, details, and, you know, you see the possible matrix within each of those domains in the middle column, they need to still be figured out. But the whole point is all these domains, or at least some of them, have been historically overlooked, you know. And so what has happened is, for example, the health impacts or the environmental impacts have never been part of the game. So when we think about AI system that was brought up earlier, so my assumption is probably FAA is not going to use generative AI. So probably all those AIs are going to be regulated somehow by FAA or any other regulatory agencies. So it's important when you think about the AI decision models to think about, you know, how to incorporate all, you know, different domains from a societal perspective into these decision making. So when the AI wants to make a decision based on the literature or the data, is not only about one of these components, it's more about the trade-off and, you know, all these components at the same time to make sure that their impacts are, you know, addressed. And so basically what I see that is a shared decision-making platform. And this is not something new to aviation industry. I mean, we have that model in even pharmaceutical sciences and everywhere. If you think about interventions and the policies that are coming out, you're thinking about the system approach and the carbon footprints, all those pharmaceutical companies nowadays are, you know, thinking about that. So even in the process of manufacturing, and when you think about the effect of a drug, it's not that, you know, how many hospitalizations your randomized control trial have shown to reduce, but you also have to think about the side effects, the interactions of this drug with other drugs, the patient's values and preferences, which is a relatively new topic that now everybody's thinking about. If you market this drug in Japan, that may not necessarily be marketed in the US. So I think these concepts are really not new. So, you know, these are already applied in other settings and jurisdictions. But I think it's, as part of this policy framework, it's important to think about these shared decision-making platforms and how these different domains can play a role, and their impacts is also incorporated into any decision-making platform. And those weights obviously are coming out of a scientific process. It should be, if it's a multi-stakeholder process, it's a scientific process that needs the involvement of different, you know, investigators and researchers from economics, from health economics, epidemiology, aviation, engineers, and everyone. And you know, the community should have a voice there, because ultimately, you know, if there's a health impact, then the Medicare and Medicaid is going to be impacted by that. You know, if, so basically one balloon is, you know, the state has to still pay for that, but another section of the state. So I stopped there, maybe the, yeah.
All right, so we'll take questions at the end, but let's sort of get through it and try to make sure we can describe it for you in sufficient detail. So this is hard to read. I think you may have it in your package, but what we tried to do is we tried to take three of those domains and show a little more detail about how these kinds of tools are created in other disciplines. And the way it works is we have a fairly robust understanding of the economic and business outcomes of the airport. I mean, we've got really good tools there. We've built them up over the years. And it's not just our airport, it's the industry. And so from the economic perspective, the metrics could be jobs, earnings, local taxes, business revenues, purchases, all of the things that our economic impact study shows, or the positive outcomes of the operations here at the airport. Personal taxes, federal taxes, state taxes, and all those things are relied upon by the state or local jurisdictions, and they predict that as a part of their operations. And so there are potential forecast tools that already exist. Tools that exist, such as the Bureau of Labor Statistics RIMS 2 model, which is a fundamental forecasting tool for economic impact studies. We've used it for our airport, and those models exist there. And there's a maturity level for these different forecast tools.
There's a transparency level that may or may not be known, some of which we didn't know, so we kind of punted it just to get this in front of you. And at the end of the day, these different tools have a confidence level that through a process of review, peer review, research, we could say, okay, a model like the Bureau of Labor Statistics model, open architecture, open structure, open source, even in some cases, is well transparent and is highly mature. Others may be initial, embryonic, not very transparent. Maybe those can't be used in this process because of the public agency nature of what we're engaged in. And so that's the process that will have to be gone through. It's not easy or simple, but it is understandable, and you can see the pathway for it. And so in each of these, we try to just give examples. So for instance, I'll run through them quickly. Tax forecasts and local budget forecasts. So Anne Arundel County knows exactly what they're expecting to achieve in their budget. So does Howard County, so does the state. So there are lots of ways we can sort of get to the forecast of what is expected as outcomes at this airport. And a decision made, for instance, just to throw it out, this is controversial, to not expand, you know, capacity in some way. That has major implications for taxes, for the state budgets, for the local budgets, for the businesses around here. Once again, rather than just throwing a dart in some ways, I'm not saying we've done that, but, you know, to use a metaphor, just throw a dart. We really say, okay, if we do this, this is the likely impact. And that's where the confidence level comes out. And so to run through, there are a couple of other models in the environmental area. You know, there's the carbon calculators that exist. Some are better than others. Clearly, we know what airplanes generate in the way of carbon. We can make assumptions just like we do about the flight paths coming out of the airport when we draw these things up. There's a model that Howard County and Anne Arundel County have created to keep track of all the operations at the airport. That's called the Bioneer model. The carbon aspect of it is probably intermediate, and the transparency is unknown because it's a private entity that's a contractor to the counties. So once again, those are research elements that have to be sussed out. It may be unusable if it's not transparent enough, because as a public entity and representing the public on this commission, transparency and high transparency, I think, and defensibility is key. We have to be able to defend it, and therefore it has to be transparent. And this whole process and decision-making process must be as well. And then the health impacts, you know, we've just talked about those. Those are fairly new to this industry. We've talked about how the FAA is reviewing their own policies, how the health impacts are being researched around the world, and in some cases in this country. Dr. Zafari's study was one of the most important. And so there are models, once again, that can predict both, you know, the typical metrics we use, as well as some additional metrics of whether or not our operations are impacting the health of individuals in this region. And so once again, some are advanced, some are intermediate. The transparency is high in some, unknown in others, and the confidence level of these has to be worked through. You're up now.
Yeah, sure. And thank you. Well, I think as part of this, you know, shared decision-making software or platform, however you want to name it, the decisions ultimately, you know, it can propose some, you know, regions. Like if a green region, you may have a policy that, you know, satisfy all those domains and, you know, is relatively safe, as well as, you know, in terms of business and economics generate, you know, economic productivity. And then the yellow, so basically that the green is a to-go, it's a good policy, it's a no-brainer. Then the yellow is basically something that you may think about it more. You know, it needs more thought and a process before making a decision. And then the red is basically a region that you may have a risky decision, meaning that, you know, when you apply all those weights and decision-making criteria, it may not necessarily be an optimal decision-making. Potentially can provide the reasons for that. And, you know, you may have some health impacts or environmental impacts or maybe economic impacts that, you know, just inform is not a, you know, optimal decision. Another thing that is not mentioned here, but I think is important is probably touch on that in the next slide when we talk about the next steps. But I think the equity aspects of any decision that is made. And that's, I mean, it is a buzzword these days, but aside from that, it gets a lot of attention, and I think is extremely important concept to think about every decision that we make. And again, this is not something new to aviation. I do that in my research in pharmaceuticals and everywhere. You know, we think about, we have to actually think about that. Now, as a mandate that, you know, think about the equity aspects of every decision that you make. And, you know, that's so true for aviation industry as well, because we have a ton of data showing that, you know, there is health inequity and, you know, inequity to exposure to noise. You can think about the reasons behind that is, as well as the health impacts of that. That, you know, there have been evidence. I'm working on a couple of grants that I mentioned. And that could be part of this decision-making process as well. You know, if you are coming up with this decision or a plan, is it going to increase disparities and inequities? Is it going to decrease that? And how's, you know, so you have some data to inform that aspect of the equation too.
Next steps. Then we can just sit down and have our discussion, because the next part is the discussion. Stacey, thank you, Stacey.
Yeah.
If I could, thank you for the support. These are very similar issues we're working through right now. You could call it a policy framework, call it a prioritization process on the surface transportation side of the equation for the department. There was a process set up by the legislature, you know, that years ago. We're trying to refine that to get a little bit deeper into some of these specific the same components you talked about. I was going to mention the one component I would have up there is equity as another, you know, major one as well. I mean, from, you know, I think in, you know, where we should start this conversation, I think this is a very good framework to sort of work throughout a committee structure to see what, you know, where this goes and how it can support, you know, again, how we start to think about we make investments. I am a little leery that a number pops out at the end and, well, that's it. I generally don't support that either. But I think in terms of forcing some of the considerations and making sure that we all understand those, and at the end of the day, there are certain other people that make decisions for us. The legislature, you know, that's the reality of democracy. That's how it works. But I think the more information we get, the more we look at things holistically, I think it's benefit for the long term of the airport and I'm just gonna, so that's sort of where I am in the community.
I think it's a very good start. What you did. You've identified some areas where we're gonna do some additional work, number of TBDs up there, like waiting and confidence, you know, we'll work with you on that kind of stuff. But I think it's a very good start. Another area besides equity that I think also has to be factored into this somehow is regulatory, right? I mean, we're subject to some regulatory requirements that regardless of what comes out of this framework, we want to keep our operating certificate, right? But I think it's a very good start.
I'd like to see how this compares to the National Plan of Integrated Airport Systems. Mm-hmm. There's some scorecard that they use to do projects. The other question I have, Paul, didn't MTA have some sort of system similar to this that they used to build their capital programs?
Yeah, I mean, every mode has different levels of this, to be frank. Obviously, the New Starts program for a new rail line, for instance, in pretty detail on some of these things, it varies. But I don't think in the aviation community, I might have been
like, other than the master planning
or the NIBIUS,
I don't see as
the master planning process goes to some level of, you know, analysis.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this takes it much further than, you know, your traditional NEPA process, the EIS process.
Right.
This is a higher level to me that says, all right, before we get down to that, we're actually getting to that nitty gritty of a project, that is where you have it. Right.
And something I want to mention too is, like, basically in line with what you said, It needs to be appreciated as a formal process. This needs to be a formal process. This needs to be a scientific process, ultimately, that, you know, that, again, the data is not coming from, you know, Mr. Chancellor or anyone, the data should comes from the science, the rigorous process. And so we are, you know, this needs to be a funded project with scientists from economics, you know, from health economics in aviation and so on. So at this stage, I think I am actively looking for funding, you know, from the federal government. I'm, you know, thinking about the NIH proposal, looking at the effects of noise on dementia, you know, Alzheimer's disease, because, you know, we have some biological reasons to believe that is going to, dementia is impacted by that. And, you know, from the Medicare perspective and data and, you know, how the expenditures would be impacted by Medicare. Do we have enough budget in the next 20 years or so? Looking at the data, but that's a multi-million dollar grant. Comes in February. But my point is, this needs to be a formal process. So those weights and those, you know, the data ultimately should come from a scientific process.
Other comments?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the work that was done. I guess my question goes to your point, who's going to pay for it? How's it getting funded? Who's doing all the work? And then I understand what our role has been as a commission, and we certainly value and appreciate all of what obviously the team and the staff does here. And so once this data is created, I want to make sure that we're still clear on our roles and not overstepping them and being able to provide a level of oversight and connection with you all, but just trying to understand, okay, we get this back and we're doing this in our committee work, and you guys are looking at your information and evaluating how do those two now come together, and we're not clashing and getting in the way of what needs to take place with
something. We have to manage the business. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And we, you know, I think we've operated in a way for years, and we don't want to impact the ability for it to function and move forward.
I again, this is very good work. I get a little nervous when I hear you say scientific too many times. This should be powered and supported by objective sources, right? Sources that are not based on emotions or, you know, how I feel on a Wednesday. And so there, I agree with you that it should be supported by objective sources. But, you know, business decisions are not always that absolute, right? So there needs to be some appreciation for judgment and instinct and experience, which isn't necessarily scientific.
Yeah.
And so you can't use that.
Exactly. People who manage business tell you that it's not scientific. It's also often not even achievable, but you do the best you can with the information you have, and you make the best decision you can make. Yeah. That's the way that works.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to do is ask for the next steps here. And the next steps would be for my fellow commissioners, the chair, to agree that we could continue working on this, to refine it, to bring it back to the next meeting of this commission, maybe with a little more detail around it, working with the work that's already been put in by the staff to see how that can get incorporated in, because we don't want to ignore that process.
Yes.
And within the next couple of weeks, we'd like to sit down with you and see what you've come up with and try to blend that together and just keep this moving forward. We feel the urgency of it because we're a year into the legislation and we're starting to look at all kinds of decisions that are important to the future of the airport and the state, and we just want to get it on with
it. I think it's safe to say we have a framework in concept, right? We have to do some work to bring it to reality.
Keep working on it. So is that something that is by acclamation allows? Can we continue just working on this? And then when the committee process comes forward, clearly put it right into the committee process.
I guess we get to a point. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I think it's extremely important that I think it's a great concept in terms of factors to be evaluated, but I think at every step we've got to have legal input into this as a major factor in terms of what data we're putting out there, how we're evaluating it, what exposure it has to class action lawsuits, what exposure it has to delay in capital program decisions. All those things, I think, ought to be part of this.
I think that's absolutely right.
And I don't want to discount the importance of the staff and the team and expertise that you all bring to place. You know, I mean, we appreciate that, value that. That's what you all have done for your careers, and never want to lose or discount the input.
The real experts.
Yeah,
that's right.
And so Jesse, as you move forward, or commission opportunity to move forward, greater transparency on where the data is coming from, sources and potential conflicts of interest, potential influential interests are, I think, going to be important.
Throughout the process, in every area. That's exactly right.
Very good. Again, thank you for doing this comment.
And thank you all for your thoughtful comments.
Great. All right, last agenda.
All right, a motion to enter closed session. We put motion and vote to go into closed session. We need to specify the topics of statutory exemptions under section 3-305 of the general provision is article annotated code of Maryland, which allowed a closed session. The topic on the agenda is legal advice, to consult with counsel to obtain legal advice. Discussion topic is allowed to be subject to closed session under general provision article 3-305B, as specified above. Do we have a motion to go into closed session?
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
So we need to have a certain meeting.
Okay. I just want to.